Okay, our next presentation is on the Fish Passage Program. This is an overview with Julie Henning, our Fish Passage Section Manager. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and Commissioners. It is my pleasure to be here today to speak about Fish Passage. I am Julie Henning. I'm the Fish Passage Section Manager. I have been a section manager for about a year and a half, but I have worked for the agency since 1999 in numerous permanent positions with both the fish program and the wildlife program. So in the next 20 minutes, I would like to give you a better idea of who we are and what we do. I'm going to start out by giving you some context into how we organize within the Habitat program, as well as our objectives, a little bit of history about the program, activities that we do, our budget, and some accomplishments. So to give you some context on the organization, the Fish Passage section is located within the Habitat program. And within the Habitat program, there are five divisions, and we are located in the Restoration Division. This slide represents the Restoration Division, and highlighted in the blue is the Fish Passage section. I supervise 14 people, both scientific technicians and biologists, and we're located in both Olympia and Yakima. Also, I wanted to mention that we work really closely with the Habitat Engineering section, and that is also located within this division. So why what we do is important? Basically, the objective is to correct fish passage barriers and unscreened diversions. And this is really a key to restoring fish populations. A single artificial barrier on a stream can keep fish from reaching many miles of habitat upstream. Additionally, working with irrigators with diversions to make sure that they are adequately screened and have proper bypasses improves fish survival. So, just so we're on the same page, what really is a fish barrier? We describe a fish passage barrier usually in the form of a man-made structure where fish cannot adequately migrate through. The most common problems at culverts that can create a barrier are, one, an excessive water drop, and this occurs at the downstream end of the culvert. High velocities, and this is where a velocity exceeds a fish swimming capabilities. And this can occur either where a culvert is undersized or is set at a steep slope. Lastly, another common barrier problem is a shallow water depth. Now, what is a fish screen? Well, there's lots of different types, but they all have the purpose to either keep fish out of an area or into an area. They are commonly used to irrigation diversions, hatchery intakes, or water supply lines. There are specific criteria needed to reduce fish migration delay, mortality, or injury, and such criteria is related to water approach velocities, screen mesh size, and screen area. And I just want to point out that the bottom photo is our Yakima screen shop, and that's where we do a lot of fabrication and construction. And the actual construction fabrication is within the capital asset management program. So some of the challenges that we face today with fish passage barriers really is related to our transportation corridor, both roads and railroads. This is a picture of the fish passage barriers on the DOT highways. The blue dots represent barriers. And DOT has over 3,185 documented fish-bearing streams, of which almost 2,000 have been evaluated as barriers. Additionally, I wanted to point out that there's over 40,000 miles of county roads statewide, and we really don't know the number of barriers for that. But we have done some GIS exercises, and we believe that there's over 33,000 barriers statewide. Yeah. So just to give you a little bit of history on the program, about the mid-1980s, fish passage problems were recognized, and we started collecting data. And in 1992, DOT looked to WDFW to help them identify where their barriers exist. And from that, we identified protocols. Protocols were developed, and a prioritization process was also developed. Additionally, a relational database was created linking culvert description with habitat characteristics, species, and priority index information. And I'll get to that in a little bit more detail in a little bit. So once we identified and developed some initial protocols, a manual was written on this, known as the Fish Passage Barrier and Surface Water Diversion Screening Assessment and Prioritization Manual. And this was published in 1998 and has been revised a few times since then. But this is really the state standard. It's science-based, repeatable, and a set of consistent standards. And folks that are out there doing inventories turn to this manual for a standard set of protocols. This manual is on our website. And not only does it have the methods for fish passage barrier inventories and prioritization, it also has how to inventory a fish screen. So in this slide, I'm going to briefly mention some of the tasks and activities that staff do within the section, and then I'll get into further detail. So we have scientific technicians that go out into the field and inventory barriers and walk streams and take physical measurements. Those measurements are put into a database. We also, from those habitat surveys, were able to prioritize barriers. We have biologists then that take that information and what we call scope projects, but they go out into the field, they assess the situation, and they come up with solutions to repair those barriers. Also, we provide technical assistance on inventories and barrier corrections. And lastly, we also inspect and maintain fishways and fish screens. And so in terms of the inventorying culverts and conducting physical surveys, we have inventory crews that identify those barriers, and they also take habitat measurements. And those measurements, basically, they walk upstream from the barrier to quantify the amount of habitat upstream and the quality of habitat. And from there, we're able to develop a priority index. And what that does, it's a relative number, but it allows us to be able to construct the best projects first that have the best benefit for fish. Also, we have the fish passage and diversion screening inventory, and this is a database that allows all the information that's collected to go into it. It's used to select projects that are vital for salmon recovery. This information is available to the public and other agencies and tribes, and we have over 30,000 records. We've been collecting information for over 20 years. We have biologists that find solutions to correct barriers. They're currently scoping 150 to 200 projects, and they work very closely with our habitat engineers to develop conceptual designs and engineered drawings for correction. Additionally, we do technical assistance to help irrigators and conservation districts on improving fish screening and bypass systems. Here's a look at our budget. For this biennium, our operating budget is $3.58 million, and our capital budget is $2.35 million. And this operating budget is about 7.5% of the overall habitat program budget. Most of our funds are private local funds. We have contracts with multiple entities. The largest entity is Department of Transportation. We have some federal dollars which come from Mitchell Act. We have capital dollars as well as general fund. Our general fund is about 4% of the overall habitat program general fund budget. So accomplishments through inventories. We have a wonderful partnership with Department of Transportation that looks to us for expertise in evaluating fish passage barriers. We completed the inventory on Department of Transportation highways back in 2007. We inventoried 6,469 culverts statewide, and 3,185 of those culverts were on fish-bearing streams. And of those, almost 2,000 were barriers. Of those barriers, 1,440 had at least 200 of meters of habitat upstream.
Madam Chair.
Commissioner Jennings.
When you say fish-bearing, is that restricted just to salmonids, or is that any native fish?
It is both resident and anadromous.
Commissioner Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Julie, you're dealing with waterfalls and culverts. I'm aware of that. I live in Skagit County, and there is some intensive feuding and fighting going on with water flows arguments. I mean, certainly not based on agriculture. It's just like in Eastern Washington, but there's a lot of feuding going on between different entities. Are you involved in that in any way?
Our section does not deal with water rights. We have a water in the habitat program. We have a water team that deals with those.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so we go ahead and do inventories, prioritization, and come up with conceptual designs to fix these barriers. DOT does their own construction. They have fixed 245 fish passage barriers and opened up over 820 miles of habitat. And this is just an example of one of their culverts that they replaced. It was an undersized culvert with an outfall drop, and they replaced it with a larger structure to get rid of the outfall drop and decrease velocities. Additionally, we work with Fish Program and Wildlife Program to address fish passage and screening issues on WFW lands. We work both on the wildlife areas and at hatcheries to inventory and repair barriers. And these pictures are an example of a project that was completed last summer at the West Rock Prairie Unit of Scatter Creek. Additionally, we have staff that works on the Family Forest Fish Passage Program, also known as the FFFP program. And this has been a really successful program. It's a cost share program that helps small forest landowners correct fish passage barriers on forest land. Since the inception of the program in 2003, the program has corrected 232 barriers and opened up over 500 miles of habitat. And this is a partnership with DNR and RCO. Also, outside entities look to us for fish passage expertise for help with inventory protocols, barrier data, and engineering support. We train salmon recovery partners on our manual, on our protocols, and in turn then they share their data that they've collected, and we're able to put that into the database. Additionally, we have contracts, again, with Department of Transportation, State Parks, Grant, PUD, BPA, and RCO. Also, in terms of fishways, we have folks that go out and inspect and maintain fishways. Specifically, we have contracts with Mitchell Act, with NOAA and Department of Transportation to do that work. Lastly, we also do screening. We have an inspection and maintenance program that comes out of the Yakima screen shop. So now I'd like to switch gears slightly and discuss the Colvert case lawsuit. And I want to do that because it's really how we've been setting our priorities in the section, as we've been really focusing on addressing some of our barriers within the Colvert case. So just in case you don't know a whole lot about the Colvert case lawsuit, this slide, the intent of the slide is to explain it briefly, but it involves the tribe's right to a fair share of the harvestable salmon in the case area. And in 2001, the tribes filed a claim that the state-owned culverts were blocking passage to substantial amounts of salmon habitat and were thereby reducing the amount of salmon that could be available for harvest. And in 2007, Judge Martinez agreed and entered into an order that the state was in breach of the tribe's treaty rights to the extent that the state owns culverts that are barriers to salmon, thereby reducing the amount of harvest available for the tribe. Now, in 2009, the trial began to determine the remedy. Closing arguments were in June 2010, and a decision is pending. And to date, a decision is still pending on what that remedy is. However, state agencies are continuing to work on correcting fish barriers. And this litigation applies to state-owned roads in Western Washington. And so basically, that includes all of Western Washington except for the watersheds in Willapa Bay and in the Columbia River. So in terms of accomplishments related to the Colvert case lawsuit for Department of Transportation, is we originally identified roughly 55 sites that fell within the Colvert case lawsuit. And of those, when we had biologists go out and look at those sites a little closer, there were about 18 sites that were removed from the list because they were in either not fish-bearing streams, they were really not on our ownership, or they were not a barrier. So we have fixed 10 barriers already, and additionally, we will be fixing 27 fish barriers this summer. This summer is really exciting for us. We'll have one of our largest construction seasons on our own lands to fix barriers. And we still, after this season, we'll still have 11 more to correct. The jobs bill that passed this week will allow us, there's $1.5 million in that for us to fix some of those 11. So we're making great progress towards reducing our liability for the agency. So this is a picture of the staff in the fish passage section. And with that, I will take any questions that you might have.
That's very good news. Great progress. Any questions?
I have one.
Commissioner Carpenter?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Julie, I know you've been doing this for a while, but I mean, have you been able to, what kind of positive results have you seen from some of these barriers that have been removed? Has there been increased in returning salmonids, anadromous, and perhaps residents? Or how do you judge that at this point?
Yeah, we don't have an extensive monitoring program. However, Department of Transportation pays for us to go out and inspect their projects to make sure that they meet the fish passage criteria. Additionally, we do some spot checks before and after where we walk upstream 500 meters and downstream 500 meters to look at presence absence. Now, obviously, if we don't see anything, it doesn't mean that there aren't fish there. However, in especially the chum streams where there's a significant number of fish, we do see significant results.
To follow up, it looks like on most of these streams that you have these projects on, they're on the smaller, they're smaller size compared to many of the bigger streams. I was just wondering if at what point would we be able to assess the coho rebuilding in some of these smaller streams as coho will spawn in a ditch. I mean, you know.
Yeah, so I've thought a lot about that. And I think to really get at that question, it's going to take an extensive amount of monitoring to look at before and after and whether that effect is from that project or whether it's good ocean conditions or what have you.
Look forward to it.
Commissioner Smith.
Thank you. Picking up a little bit on that, in terms of partnerships, I would assume you do partner with regional salmon enhancement organizations like Nooksack Salmon Enhancement Association, and that being they could be a good source of citizen science for some of this monitoring as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great point. We're trying to really reach out more and more, especially money is getting slimmer and slimmer, to try to encourage and develop those partnerships. We've done a lot with it in terms of our inventory work, but it would be great to reach out more in terms of the implementation.
Well, in our neck of the woods, there's a Skagit.
Skagit
fishing enhancement, and then right next to it is the one for the Nooksack. So I would be happy to get you in touch with them or have Rachel, who's the director at Nooksack, get in touch with you.
Okay, yeah.
It's a pretty well-funded organization, and it has wide-reaching, as does the Skagit.
Yeah, great. That would be wonderful.
Director Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Julie, thanks very much for the presentation. And, this is an example of the type of work that this agency does that we haven't been very good at letting people know about. That's really, really valuable. Not only valuable in the sense of the work that our staff members do, but also the technical assistance that they provide other entities so that they can make the types of improvements that are associated with eliminating and improving fish passage barriers and improving fish passage. Julie, I wondered if you might turn around and introduce some of the members of your team that I think are here with you.
Yeah, I would love to.
You want a stand-up team?
Yeah, and do you guys want to come on up?
Okay. Just let us know who they are.
Okay, from left to right, we have Eva Barber, Greg Johnson, Dave King. That's it. And also, I would like to introduce the division manager, David Price. Okay. So, thanks.
Thank you.
Really great.
Good job.
Yeah, very important work. We know the attention that the tribes have drawn to habitat issues, their recent white paper. So this is very timely and good news. I think it would be kind of embarrassing if we, the Department of Fish and Wildlife, had a lot of fish passage barriers on our land. So I'm really happy that you're making this kind of progress. There aren't that many more to go. Great job.
Madam Chair.
Commissioner Jennings.
With your supervisor in the room, I'll ask this question. And it's a topic unrelated to fish passage, but it came up earlier today. So you've been a supervisor about 18 months, you said?
Yes.
Is that your first supervisor position?
No, it's not.
For the state? My real question is, has the department sent you to the essentials to supervisor training yet?
Yes, I have been to one and two.
Great. Excellent.
That's the right answer.
Okay. Correct answer. Thank you. Okay. Thanks very much. Really good to see you. Okay, we're ready for a break. Let's just take 10 minutes, and then we'll move on to the last two items on the agenda. So come back in 10 minutes.